Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon?, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is August 8th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 66 of Who's Reading the Organon. We'll be reading aphorism number 37, and if time, move to 38. And if you are just a first-time listener, we welcome you. Vera and I have been building an understanding of homeopathy based upon the principles and universal laws set out by Samuel Hahnemann. While we're waiting for Vera to log on, we will begin with our Twitter inspirations. Everyone knows I am a Twitterholic, and I'd like to introduce you to my friend Lyle Hawkins, who on Twitter says, Twitter was developed in August 2006 and has become one of the fastest social media platforms around. And in November of 2009, Twitter had reached 5 billion tweets. The growth of Twitter continues to grow at an unstoppable rate. Right now, there are over 105 million registered users, and there are 300,000 new signups every day. If you want to follow Lyle, he's at L_Hawkins. And please join us on Twitter and get our social media network information out there to the general public all around the world. Here's our Twitter inspiration for today by Denise Carlisle. Let your smile change the world, but don't let the world change your smile. And that's by a quote by Sandra Cisneros. Another one by Flipbooks, who is a very, very highly popular Twitterholic. He says, happiness is anyone and anything that's loved by you. And that is a quote by Charlie Brown. One more happiness quote is by Henry Van Dyke, quoted by Greatest Quotes. Happiness is inward and not outward. And so it does not depend on what we have, but on what we are. I just thought I'd like to bring a little happiness into everyone's life today. I think I hear Vera on the line.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Vera. So happy to have you this fine Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. I'd like to spend another minute or so on more news that I've been reading. I get it through Twitter because people send me information and whatever is running in the stream. I thought it was quite interesting in the New York Times. There is a new view of gravity. And we often have spoken about gravity as a universal law that's unshakable, that's there. But there is a professor of physics at the University of Amsterdam whose contention is that gravity is an illusion that has caused a continuous ruckus among physicists, or at least among those who profess to understand it. His name is Eric Verlinde, and he is a very respected string theorist. And so it might behoove you to take a look at that. He's trying to reverse the logic of 300 years of science in his recent paper titled On the Origin of Gravity and the Laws of Newton. I suppose there's always something new we can learn every time we take a new perspective on things. He says, gravity is the consequence of venerable laws of thermodynamics, which describe the behavior of heat and gases. He says, for me, gravity doesn't exist. Who was recently in the United States to explain himself. Not that he can't fall down, but Dr. Verlinde is among a number of physicists who say that science has been looking at gravity the wrong way and that there is something more basic from which gravity emerges. And he also interrelates the stock market and other kinds of things with his perspective. So I think that scientists should take a new look at homeopathy because perhaps a new perspective will teach them a thing or two. And the only thing on the network news that I'd like to mention is that this week, actually just a day ago, Homeopathy World Community has been approved for network support by WEGO, W-E-G-O, which is a health activist organization for passionate leaders in social media. And we're very honored and pleased to have gotten this special approval and sponsorship. We'll be seeing them soon on the network. We're ready to move on to aphorism number 37. And if you want to lead us in from the previous aphorism or just jump in, I'm ready for you, Vera.
Okay. 37 is still within what Hanuman is saying in 35. He says, we shall consider in three different cases, as well as what happens in nature when two dissimilar natural diseases meet together. So in 36, he described a situation, and if anyone hasn't done this yet, make yourself a grid of similar and dissimilar disease, and stronger and weaker. In 36, he described two dissimilar diseases where the older one is the stronger, so the newer disease isn't felt. In 37, we're continuing. So also, under ordinary medical treatment, an old chronic disease remains uncured and unaltered if it's treated according to the common allopathic medicine method. That is to say, with medicines that are incapable of producing in healthy individuals a state of health similar to the disease, even though the treatment should last for years and is not of too violent character. This is daily witnessed in practice. It is therefore unnecessary to give any illustrative examples. And the footnote here says, but if treated with violent allopathic remedies, other diseases will be formed in its place, which are more difficult and dangerous to life. My understanding of what he's saying there, and anyone is willing to chime in with how they see it, is actually within this aphorism, Hanuman is seeing allopathic medicines as producing a dissimilar disease. And because it's weaker, if it's not violently done, it's a dissimilar disease where the older disease is stronger and the allopathic medicinal disease is weaker. And therefore, it doesn't really do anything unless the allopathic treatment is very violent, in which case, as we have all seen, I think there are allopathic treatments that actually harm the patient.
Okay. I just last night wrote a whole new blog about the drug Fosamax, which millions of women have been taking over long-term over the course of 10, 20 years, decades. And now they're reporting that the bones are literally breaking and snapping. So they're hardened and brittle, and even though that was the goal of treating these women with osteoporosis and osteopenia was to strengthen their bones, and instead what happens is the opposite. The bones are literally so brittle that they're having the doctors say it's as if they've been in a car accident. It's not softening, but it's causing them not to be able to have flexible, strong bones in a healthy manner. And so people should be notified about this, for one thing, and perhaps even more FDA warnings. How does this relate, do you think, with aphorism number 37?
Well, I think that we need to take the understanding back a little bit. Hanuman says to us earlier on in previous aphorisms that we've studied that substances are considered medicinal when they can alter the state of health in a human being. Now, that baseline is they can alter the state of health in a sick person or a healthy person. If a substance can affect your health, then it has potential to be medicinal, but it also has potential to be harmful. Now, medicinal substances set up symptom complexes in the body. They set up artificial diseases. And here it looks to me that Hahnemann is describing the the artificial disease that is set up by allopathic medicines. Mm-hmm. Because also allopathic medicines come under this category of a substance that is shown to be medicinal because it can alter the state of health of the human being. You see what I mean? Okay. So the Fosamax that you're describing is setting up its own symptom picture. And it's setting up a symptom picture that includes brittle, soft bones.
You yes, see? It does.
So it's setting up a certain disease in the body. Now, in the case of Fosamax, it's very sad because the medicine is being prescribed to help with exactly the symptom picture that it's worsening. So maybe someone will try making a homeopathic version of Fosamax to try and save the company. That would be one for the books, huh?
Well, we already do. We have Calc Fos, and it's a biphosphate.
Yeah.
So it is. We do have a homeopathic remedy that we've been using, either in tissue cell salt or higher potency for hundreds and hundreds of years. It would just have to match that individual, and we know that Calc Fos is used for bone growth for it in all different age ranges, from teething to adolescence and dealing with skin, and in the elderly. So it's possible it could be of support to help for the women who have taken this over the past years. The other thing that when
I would just be wary. I would just be wary, Debbie. This isn't a prescription for Calc Fos.
It's not a prescription, but where it fits
the totality of symptoms, as prescribed by a homeopath, not self-prescribed. See, I'm throwing in all the disclaimers. Self-medication is not a good thing.
We do need to put the disclaimers because over the course of our past months, we know that we need a complete case taken to understand the individual and their needs and their symptom picture. The other thing about the Fosamax is with homeopathy, we give a dose one time and watch and wait and see what the physical, mental, and emotional response is. But by giving Fosamax every week, once a week, on a repetitive basis for years on end, they're not looking at that level of response. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might go in for a bone check once a year.
But I just find it very interesting that in this aphorism, Hahnemann is referring to allopathic treatment when it's not violent as a weaker dissimilar disease, and when it is violent as a stronger dissimilar disease. And this is what he's going to go into in 38 to talk about the stronger dissimilar disease. So 37 acts like as a connecting aphorism as well.
Let's go into number 38 then.
Okay. I'll read it.
Great.
Okay. Or the new dissimilar disease is the stronger. You remember the grid? First we had dissimilar and weaker. Now we're doing dissimilar and stronger. In this case, the disease under which the patient originally labored, being the weaker, will be kept back and suspended is the important word here, by the accession of the stronger one, until the latter shall have run its course or been cured. And then the older one reappears uncured. Two children affected with a kind of, and here Hahnemann goes into examples, example after example after example. This is something he does also in chronic diseases, and we should just be aware that the examples that he presents here are the tip of the iceberg. Two children affected with a kind of epilepsy remained free from epileptic attacks after infection with ringworm, tinea. But as soon as the eruption on head was gone, the epilepsy returned just as before, as Tulpius observed. The itch, as Schopf saw, disappeared on the occurrence of the scurvy, but after the cure of the latter, it again broke out. So also the pulmonary phthisis remained stationary when the patient was attacked by a violent typhus, but went on again after the latter had run its course. If mania occur in a consumptive patient, the phthisis with all its symptoms is removed by the former, but if that goes off, the phthisis returns immediately and proves fatal. When measles and smallpox are prevalent at the same time and both attack the same child, the measles that had already broken out is generally checked by the smallpox that came somewhat later, nor does the measles resume its course until after the cure of the smallpox, but it not infrequently happens that the inoculated smallpox is suspended for 4 days by the supervention of the measles, as opposed by mange, after the desquamation of which the smallpox completes its course. So we see in between smallpox and measles, there's possibly even a back and forth going on between the smallpox and the measles. As one gets stronger, weakens a bit, the other gets stronger, weakens a bit, then the other one comes back. Even when the inoculation of the smallpox had taken effect for 6 days, and the measles then broke out, the inflammation of the inoculation remained stationary, and the smallpox did not ensue until the measles had completed its regular course of 7 days. In an epidemic of measles, that disease attacked many individuals on the fourth or fifth day after the inoculation of smallpox, and prevented the development of the smallpox until it had completed its own course, whereupon the smallpox appeared and proceeded regularly to its termination. The true smooth erysipelatous-looking scarlatina of Sydenham, with sore throat, was checked on the fourth day by the eruption of cowpox, which ran its regular course, and not till it was ended did the scarlatina again establish itself. It's like back and forth, you see, over and over again. But on another occasion, as both diseases seemed to be of equal strength, the cowpox was suspended on the eighth day by the supervention of the true smooth Latina of Sydenham, and the red areola of the former, of the cowpox, disappeared until the scarlatina was gone, whereupon the cowpox immediately resumed its course and went on to its regular termination. The measles suspended the cowpox on the eighth day, when the cowpox had nearly attained its climax. The measles broke out. The cowpox now remained stationary and did not resume and complete its course until the desquamation of the measles had taken place, so that on the 16th day it presented the appearance it otherwise would have shown on the 10th day, as Quartum observed. Even after the measles had broken out, the cowpox inoculation took effect, but did not run its course until the measles had disappeared, as Quartum likewise witnessed. I myself saw the mumps immediately disappear when the cowpox inoculation had taken effect and nearly attained its height. It was not until the complete termination of the cowpox and the disappearance of its red areola that this febrile tumefaction of the parotid and submaxillary glands that is caused by a peculiar miasm reappeared and ran its regular course of 7 days. And thus it is with all dissimilar diseases. The stronger suspends the weaker when they do not complicate one another, which is seldom the case with acute diseases, but they never cure one another. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a lot. It's quite a lot to absorb. But inside all of this, there's the one principle. If the new dissimilar disease is stronger, it will suspend what's going on. In the same way as we go back to the concept of the classroom, if there's a kid who's misbehaving and always misbehaves, and then you're given the school problem kid, pre-Ritalin, and now all the focus is on the problem kid, and the one who was always a bit problematic is kind of quieter because he's out of his depth. And then once the stronger, dissimilar disease is dealt with, we go back to the original situation because it's still there. Nothing has addressed it.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting that what Hahnemann has provided is all these scenarios of actual observations, and he gives the person who he'd been in contact with at that time, who was providing these witnesses. So these are actual cases, and to support the principle that he's providing for us today. As if he's not just making it up and taking it out of thin air, but he's actually observed it, so it's actual experience. And in that way, we can do the same thing if we pay attention to our own lives and our own illnesses and what is happening with us when we have a symptom or a complex of symptoms for whether it is an epidemic disease or something that comes around in our neighborhood.
I just want to remind people of the word phthisis. Jasker translates it as a wasting away of the body, an old term for pulmonary tuberculosis with subsequent emaciation and loss of strength. Tuberculosis, specifically tuberculosis of the lungs, consumption.
Mm-hmm. So there were quite a few illnesses, epidemics, which were happening during his day and age, that he was very concerned about. And how did he deal with it? I mean, when he saw something of this nature where an illness broke out and then there was something else that swept through the area, he's not really telling us that right now. He's just providing for us a principle of a law of nature, the way that the body responds to these kinds of illnesses, so we can be aware of it.
What's interesting also in the way he's describing within this aphorism, which I did try to bring out in the reading, is that you have this constant ebb and flow, that it's very rare that a disease just goes up and up and up and then breaks and then disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when there are two diseases current in the body, you have like a back and forth between the dissimilar diseases, which really implies that your patient must be totally miserable, because as one subsides, the other one gets stronger and takes over, and as that subsides, the other one gets stronger and takes over. And you're just waiting for at least one of them to run its course so that you can treat. And this is where homeopathic treatment can chase this kind of situation. But mm-hmm. we see the essential principle, the new dissimilar disease is stronger, so the original disease will be suspended. And once the new disease has run its course, then the original disease will emerge.
It might be quite a surprise for somebody to think that they had gotten the measles and then something else appears, and they think, oh, the measles is gone now, or the whatever of the illnesses that he presented to us so far, that you might think, okay, that's gone, I'm done with it, and then it will return, which might be quite surprising to the person who's experiencing it.
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people report, I know I've had people report to me that when someone with arthritis in their knees, and when she got bronchitis, the arthritis was suspended. She did not have pain in her knees. Once the bronchitis was done, the pain in the knees came back.
Yeah.
Exact example of stronger dissimilar disease suspending. And I think really what people need to do with this is not just accept it because Hahnemann said. That's the last thing he would have wanted. Now you start going out and asking people, have you experienced this? You ask yourself, have I experienced this? See if it's true. See if you can acknowledge it to be true, because then it's a principle that you can use. Even if one part of you thinks, oh no, this isn't true at all, then you can't use the principle, which means that a certain element of your case taking and especially case management in homeopathy will be lacking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you like for us to move on to begin reading aphorism number 38, or do you have some more to express with 37 and 38? Oh, let's see. 39, I meant. Should we go
on
to the next?
We can go on to 39. Just I see we only have 4 minutes left. So sure.
Right.
So
we can just do a little reading.
Okay. Would
aphorism,
you like to read?
Aphorism number 39. Now the adherents of the ordinary school of medicine saw all this for so many centuries. They saw that nature herself cannot cure any disease by the accession of another, be it ever so strong. If the new disease be dissimilar to that already present in the body, what shall we think of them that they nevertheless went on treating chronic diseases with allopathic remedies, namely with medicines and prescriptions capable of producing God knows what morbid state, almost invariably, however, one dissimilar to the disease to be cured. And even though physicians did not hitherto observe nature attentively, the miserable results of their treatment should have taught them that they were pursuing an inappropriate, a false path. Did they not perceive when they employed, as was their custom, an aggressive allopathic treatment in a chronic disease, that thereby they only created an artificial disease dissimilar to the original one? Which as long as it was kept up, merely held in abeyance, which was the previous suspended, merely suspended the original disease, which latter, however, always returned and must return as soon as the diminished strength of the patient no longer admitted of the continuous of the allopathic attacks on the life. Thus, the itch exanthema certainly disappears very soon from the skin under the employment of violent purgatives, frequently repeated. But when the patient can no longer stand the factitious dissimilar disease of the bowels and can take no more purgatives, then either the cutaneous eruption breaks out as before, or the internal sore displays itself in some bad symptom, and the patient, in addition to his undiminished original disease, has to endure the misery of a painful, ruined digestion and impaired strength to boot. And can you believe that was about one, was that one sentence? Almost two, three.
Not
sentences.
All of it, but most of it.
Okay, let me do one more line and then we'll close for the day. So where was I?
you were with the boots.
Yeah, we'll give them a kick. So also, when the ordinary physicians keep up artificial ulcerations of the skin and issues on the exterior of the body with the view of thereby eradicating a chronic disease, they can never attain their object by so doing. They can never cure them by that means. As such, artificial cutaneous ulcers are quite alien and allopathic to the internal affection, but inasmuch as the irritation produced by several tissues is at least sometimes a stronger similar disease than the indwelling malady, the latter
stronger
is thereby
dissimilar.
What did I say? Dissimilar
similar.
Disease.
Yeah.
Then the indwelling malady, the latter is thereby sometimes silenced and suspended for a week or two. Okay, we are at the very end of our time. And
okay, we'll revisit this aphorism tomorrow.
It's good to review again and again, and thank you for sharing this time with me, Vera.
Mm-hmm.
I
thank
always
you,
enjoy it. And we'll see you tomorrow. Take your Organon off the shelf and read it, guys.
Bye.
See you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.